thank you both for being part of the interview this morning. I'm having the pleasure and honor of talking with James Voschel, also known as Jim Voschel, who's been a painter in Baltimore, in the Baltimore area, for more than 50 years. He spent 3 decades living in the city, documenting daily life, creating hundreds of images on canvas and paper. For the past 23 years, he's lived on the farm, or 3 decades, actually, of northern Baltimore County, painting scenes of nature that now surrounds his life. And welcoming to this new life and all the goodness that is a part of James Voschel's life is this interview. Also joining us is Bill Waters, who is a retired teacher, who is also a student of Jim's, and he has been friends with Jim for 50 years. So welcome to the interview, guys. This segment is called Live Your Masterpiece, and I can say for sure that James is living his masterpiece, as you are, Bill Waters.
Thank you, Holly.
It's good to have you both here. There's so much to tell. You were mentioning a little off air about your connection, and if you want to elaborate on that more from here, I would love to hear more.
Well, Bill was a writer, is a writer, and he did a number of interviews throughout the years of artists, and he would write little bits for the newspaper and things like that. And he actually brought some of his teaching classes out here to the farm to see the studios and to talk about our lives. It was, I liked his writing. I liked the way he wrote, and I thought he was excellent. So I got the idea that a lifetime of my work should be recorded in some kind of a way, preferably a book. And I wanted him to do the written parts of the book. So I threw this out at him, and he agreed to do it.
Now, let me clarify.
Okay.
Jim's throwing it out at me meant that on many occasions, when often at Jim's parties, he would introduce me to someone, and that introduction quickly got to the point that I was going to write his biography someday. And I made the mistake of thinking that we were just sort of joking about it. And over the years, the joke became something more serious. And then when I retired, we set a plan. And 3 years after we started the interviews, Jim, we had a book.
Wow. That's great.
And I think he did an excellent job. We left out quite a bit of my life, because it would have taken more than one book.
we
tried to clean it up a little bit. Anyway, what he wrote, I felt, was really, really a good job, and I think it envelops itself around the photographs of the major part of my works. I've probably done 500 or more paintings. I've done 10 wall murals, a number of drawings and sketches and things like that. But the book selected probably 200 images that kind of represent the best of the best of everything that I've done in my entire career. The way Bill wrote about it really brings it to life, and I think he's done an excellent job. Everyone that's read the book has told us how much they enjoyed the reading, that they couldn't put it down, and when they would get depressed or upset about the world news, they would pick up our book and open it to a chapter and take great delight in reminiscing.
It sounds like you chose wisely when you picked Bill.
Well, there's another way of looking at that, and that is that, Jim's life is fascinating. His determination as an artist to make a living from what he's painted since a very short stay as a school teacher in the Baltimore County schools. You have to be something of a work of art yourself to manage to achieve what he's achieved in 50 years. And in many respects, the book wrote itself. We sat and talked every Monday for a couple of hours for almost 2 years before we got into the nitty-gritty of selecting images and actually getting it fully drafted and designed. But Jim's a living work of art. So at the risk of sounding like a mutual admiration society here, we'll just say that our friendship has deepened over the months and years, and we've had the great benefit of hearing from lots of people that they've enjoyed these insights into Jim's life. And the book is available in the Baltimore County and Baltimore City libraries. It's recently we were contacted by the Baltimore Museum of Art, and they requested a copy. So we're feeling real good about it's being another part of Jim's overall life's work.
I can appreciate that. As growing up in Baltimore, as a Baltimore Hun, I have great memories of Jim and his works and those guys playing checkers on the side of the wall, life larger than life, and what it meant to make that happen, being on scaffolding and all of the things that Jim has portrayed as really authentic to the Baltimore experience has really impressed me over my years as a person on the planet. So that's no surprise to me that you would be getting accolades for sharing that story.
And the image of that project you just mentioned is featured in the book. So it's open the book and there it is.
It's such a great one. I remember that every time I drove down Frederick Road, I would remember how much went into that, you know, just incredible. Your life's work is a living masterpiece, Jim, and I'm honored to know you and to know your generous spirit and your kind-hearted nature. And I'm really glad that Bill and I were able to coordinate an interview today. It's quite magical.
Well, thank you very much. You're very kind.
Well, tell me more. What got you inspired to switch over to nature or working more with watercolors? You talk.
That was easy because after more than 20 years of living in sort of the rough parts of Baltimore City, my studio ended up being robbed 2 times. I was attacked and accosted on the street. Fortunately, I was able to escape without too much personal harm. And I just started thinking that I had spent all these years living with and observing and painting these people. And I was just getting nervous about my own personal survival. So I started thinking about maybe I needed to leave the city. I was either going to get shot or attacked or hurt, or I may end up having to shoot somebody else in my self-defense. And I didn't want to play these kinds of games with life. I merely wanted to paint about it. So I was looking for places in the country. There was no place down on the Eastern Shore where I'm from, because my parents were dead. There was no place for me to really go back to. So I was actually had friends that turned me on to some possible places in the country in West Virginia. So I was looking for possible places. When I met Lynn, my life partner, at an opening at a museum, and we became friends, and she had a farm. She was living on a farm in North Baltimore County, and I took advantage of that a number of times by bringing my camera out and enjoying photographing nature, and it became like a place for me to disappear from the stress too. So eventually I finished a wall mural. And during that period, Lynn decided that her old barn could be a perfect studio for me on the farm. So eventually, long story short, she invited me to move my studio from the city to Baltimore County onto this farm, which I finally did. It took 100 truckloads. And you remember my old gray truck?
Yeah.
Well, I used that to haul my entire studio from West Baltimore to the farm. Took 100 truckloads up and down Route 83. During the process of moving my stuff here, I started repairing the barn because it was not a walk-in usable place. It, from the ground up, it needed a lot of repairs. Structurally, it had no electric. It needed electrical works. And there was just a multitude of things to do to turn it into a studio, which took approximately a year of work. And it's now been my studio for about 30 years, and it's been a wonderful place to use and to get back to nature and to paint paintings dealing with our environment and our relationship to our environment.
You opened that question, Holly, with the curiosity about making such a dramatic move. And Jim is inclined to very quickly speak in terms of survival, which were quite clear needs if he was to continue his career on the track that he'd chosen. But he can sometimes make it sound as if his relationship with the community was embattled. And I, as his biographer, I would just kind of footnote that and to say that Jim worked very hard to be a member of the community, and he was accepted and understood. And while some people might have had their own curiosities about why he was there, never did he act as a voyeur, somebody just kind of, you know, walking along, snapping photographs and painting from those photographs, but rather he established relationships with the community and was at one level beloved. Now, the people that were robbing him didn't love anybody. They were themselves trying to survive in lots of the wrong ways. But Jim's departure, I think, can be understood also in terms of Baltimore's failure to complete the Renaissance that it had declared back when you were living in Baltimore. Then Mayor William Donald Schaefer was very intent on having Baltimore revive itself through the arts, the programs that designated a certain percentage of the costs of school renewal and school building, just being one example of that. But to wrap this up, I just have to say Baltimore failed in that. And in many respects, they failed Jim. And if his career was to continue, it was going to have to continue someplace else. We're all very lucky that he didn't run off to New York in the earlier days when New York offered possibilities that Baltimore couldn't. He invested himself in the hope of the city, and the city's hope didn't happen. And we're all still struggling with Baltimore's struggles.
Indeed. Very much so. And I remember back then when those things were happening with Jim and how much he actually put in his heart and soul to go into Shirley's for breakfast, or, you know, having that generous spirit of giving butter at parties, things that, you know, Jim has always done whatever he could. And I don't doubt for a minute that he was connecting with the people around him.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, I photographed a lot of the neighborhood kids, and I actually would give them black and white prints that would make in a dark room that I had in my warehouse studio. They would run home and give them to their parents, and I actually had the doorbell ringing, and parents would drop by and thank me for the photographs that I had taken of the kids. So yeah, that was early on in my career there, and I tried to make that really work for me, and it did for a number of years. But it was getting to the point where there was open air drug markets on my street, where hundreds of people would come to buy their drugs. There was the day I moved out of my studio and gave the keys to the landlord, there was a machine gun battle on my street where the police picked up like 38 spent cartridges from the shooting on the street. And I have to say, I was immensely grateful that I finally moved away from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good heavens.
Jim's departure from West Baltimore was the episode of The Wire that David Simon left out.
That's, really?
I'm joking.
I was like, wait a minute. Should I take you literally or should I take you figuratively?
I don't know. That's always a mistake.
No, and a lot of people watch The Wire and think, man, Baltimore must be a crazy place to live. I mean, I got mugged on my porch right before we moved, too, and I thought, okay, now's the time to go. I was really lucky, you know, really lucky that the guy was just seeking something that I didn't even have and left me in good shape at the end of it. But it was those moments that you're like, okay, it's time to go. It's time to move on.
Well, it's been difficult for us all. If you were born and raised in Baltimore, as I was, it's a shame when you bump into somebody from out of town. They'll say, "Is it like The Wire?" And you think, "Well, I guess there is a part of it that is like that." But there's also the part that Jim painted. And one of the things that's so nice about the book is that people pick it up and they'll say, "I know that store. Or I know that corner." Or I know that stretch of road, and it's you can hear the warmth in their voices in reaction to these images that we all shared,
yeah.
And wish had done better over the years.
Has Jim met any of the children since those murals or people since those murals went up? And I mean, you gotta imagine that a child that's blown up larger than life on the side of a building would come around one day and think, "That's me. That was me."
I don't want to take you away from Jim too long, and I've been accused of talking too much, but I'm not sure Jim would have thought about the experience we had when we returned to Hamilton Elementary Middle School, where Jim did an installation, which is essentially a wall mural of images that he carefully selected to provide a context of educational inspiration for the kids in those hallways. And when we went, while we were writing the book, a young man approached Jim and said that he was a student there when Jim was painting that. And he shook Jim's hand and actually kind of wept at the prospect of meeting the artist that so many years before he had watched create the images that were on the school that he attended.
I imagine so. That's a really
wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very touched by that, and it's one thing to get paid for an image or a project. It's another thing to get the affirmation from the viewer who love it and utilize it in their lives. That young man that day talked about how it affected him and how the teachers would bring the classes out into the hall to view the mural and to talk about certain aspects of it. So in a sense, I was still teaching, even though I wasn't a teacher anymore academically. But that's what art is all about. It's a form of communication that's one society leads to the next society. I mean, the Greeks and the Romans left their images and their artwork, and we learn about these cultures. And our responsibility, or at least the artists that choose to be a part of it, their responsibility is to record, interpret, and demonstrate what our society is all about. So it's important when you see someone get it, you know, because you throw a lot of images out there, and a lot of people don't really get it. But this is why I like to paint realism, because I think it's easier for people to understand. And once they understand, then you can communicate what you're trying to get them to know. So
what Jim is expressing is gave the title to one of the chapters, which is still teaching after all these years. A little bit of help from Paul Simon in the Still Crazy After All These Years, and I think that probably applies too. So,
yeah.
But,
well, what Jim doesn't know is that I became an artist myself, and I've been told that I paint what I feel, whereas photorealism, like what Jim's doing, is painting, you know, exactly what is being seen, and both have equal merit in my mind, because there's those abstract moments or visionary moments, and then
there's for all the forms, all of the different styles,
yeah,
all the ways of interpreting,
yeah.
There's all, yes.
And so, your use of color in all of your images is just dynamic and beautiful. And I choose to use a lot of color and a lot of primary color. And I think that I look to being more, I wanted to be more photorealistic when I started. And it just wasn't who I am as a person. I see life as a technicolor world. I often, you know, feel the world through a very empathetic way. So it makes sense for me to paint the way I paint, whereas it makes sense for you to paint what you paint.
Absolutely. We all kind of choose that, you know, as we go along, whether it's the media or whether it's the techniques or the principles and elements of design. It's all there. And it doesn't matter whether you're painting or whether you're writing or whether you're building an architectural piece, or it's just a multitude of ways of getting involved with the creative spirit and elements of art.
Yeah. Well, I have Rembrandt to thank for the message to be inspired and inspire others and live your...
One of my absolute favorites.
I had a feeling. And his message to me was live your masterpiece. I was at the Met and I was with Alex Gray, who's more of a visionary artist. And he said, your mission is to go out and find a message from one of the paintings. And boy, did I find one. I was bawling like a baby. Bawling like a baby in front of this painting.
And, that's great.
And then one of the guards let me know that if I really liked that life-size painting of Rembrandt, then I should check out his earlier works. And I walked down the hallway, and there were little pencil drawings, not only of his, but of his students and the people who had worked with him. And more tears. I just bawling like a baby walking through the Met. And be inspired, inspire others, and live your masterpiece. It's up to you to do what you feel is right, and to live that masterpiece no matter what it is, whether it's building a fence or painting a picture or raising your children or, you know, becoming a radio personality. I never expected that. Now here I am living my masterpiece as a mother and an artist and a radio personality, and all the things that I'm doing all kind of wrap into one beautiful painting, a portrait of who I am, and that's a good legacy to leave, all those things. And so
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and the fact that Bill's doing that with you, it's true. Your legacy needs to be carried on. That's why I was so fascinated to get you into doing an interview, because you left a legacy with me, and I will never forget it, and I feel more cultured having known you, and I feel like a lot of more people would really benefit from hearing your message. So with that, I'll let you take the microphone again.
Well, I'm going to just throw, as one of the people who probably didn't know he was being inspired at the time, any more than any teacher knows exactly who he's touching or who she's touching in the classroom. Jim's gift to me, now for over 50 years has been to keep pursuing art. I mean, Jim was never content to introduce me as a teacher. Not that there's any, I'm very proud of my teaching career, but he always wanted people to know that I was also a writer. And throughout this project, I can't tell you how many times he kept saying, Bill, this book is your art. It's not mine. It's my life that you're covering, but the book is your art, so you have to do it your way. And that was a great gift to me. And Jim has, since the book's publication, has heard from countless people who recognize that Jim actually was a figure in pointing them toward artistic lives. I mean, you could begin with your father and an artist named Stephen Wall, you might remember. And
Steve. You guys were in school together.
That's right. My sister, who taught at Maryland Institute College of Art for over 40 years, was also Jim's student and credits him to having inspired her. And the list goes on. To my students, the ones I brought out here to the studio, and when we would load back onto the minibuses and go back to Bryn Mawr, they were very quiet, and you would see that they were looking out the window, and it was as if their exposure to this life here in Parkton, this artistic existence, was transformative for them. They hadn't looked at the world that way. They hadn't imagined that you can pursue an artistic life and have a complete and rewarding career. And it was just amazing to see them in the bus, looking out the window, transformed.
Yeah, I imagine. Wow, that's beautiful.
You don't have to own fancy cars, and you don't have to live in fancy places. I've lived my entire career in warehouses, in crazy places that I had to fix up myself to even make livable. These are sacrifices one makes in order to have enough money or to have enough survival things intact to continue what you're doing. So it's been a strange and interesting life.
Well, what's your favorite memory of all of your?
Oh my God!
Do you have any one that stands out, or are they just like 50 years worth of great memories swirling in there?
Oh, I'll think about this after we're off the air, and I'll come up with 15 different things. But having a painting selected by Artist Equity to donate to Mayor Schaefer was a highlight. Being accepted into the mural programs, being accepted at the BMA, Baltimore Museum of Art, in their annual and biannual exhibitions. I mean, getting a piece accepted, a national piece accepted in the New York gallery, out of 300 people were selected out of the entire country, and my piece was selected and actually printed in their catalog, which
quite lovely.
It was a painting of a wall surface, one of the more abstract kinds of pieces that I did while in the city. It's textural and a graffiti and sort of mishmash of the buildings kind of falling down and things being boarded up over their windows and things of this sort. But just getting a piece out of the entire country accepted in a show is something that's just a highlight you can't believe.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Affirmation, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Just like those machine guns on the day you were leaving. Affirmations.
Yes. That was reality.
What, my other question I always ask people, and I know we're coming up on our 30-minute mark here, or just past it. I'd like to keep you for a little longer. Well, what brings you the most joy, Jim? in any arena you want, what brings you the most joy? I asked a lot of my guests this because I'm really curious. What brings you joy?
Certainly a lot of joy was getting ready for an exhibition and being finished the hard work, and maybe even having a party to celebrate finishing a group of pieces that would go into a one-man show or something.
Yeah.
But the joy is basically seeing the people's reactions to the work.
Yeah.
I mean, I struggle with the work. I deal with the problems. You try to find a solution to every one of the problems. And then you put it up on the wall, and you hope you get a positive reaction to it. And when you do, then you're happy.
Yeah.
It provides you with the inspiration to go into the next group of projects, in which you have to make that decision and decide, and depends on what they're for, and the process starts all over again.
Yeah.
My problem right now is that I'm entering the end of my career, and I realize that there's just a million more things that I want to paint, and I may not get the chance to, and that saddens me a great deal. So I wish for another lifetime, because I've got a lot more statements to make, and I hope that the ones I've already made give a lot of people, and a certain number of people, a joy in looking at and understanding and identifying with.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that brought tears to my eyes. You know, let's hope you've got another lifetime of art coming your way. The next lifetime or the ones after that, because it certainly seems like you have quite a bit to say. And sometimes artists get blocked, and sometimes they just are an endless flow.
I've never been blocked. I just open my eyes, and whether I'm in a car or whether I'm looking out the same window that I live at, I sit on the porch, and I see the same trees and the same birds and the same everything. And every time I see them, they're in a different position. They're in a different situation. They're in different elements. The weather's different. The lighting is different. There's never an end. Never an end. And all one has to do is open its eyes. It's all there.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I'm going to wipe the tears from mine, because that was really beautiful.
And, well, thank
you. I feel very, very grateful to have you on the line with me today.
Well, I hope it serves you well.
I think it's going to serve not only me, but a lot of people moving forward in life and feeling the need for inspiration and to not be blocked and remember those things that are around you. I was studying nature awareness for a while with a man named John Young, who's a mentor, and he wrote a book called What the Robin Knows, and one of the exercises that he would send us out to do is to go out and look at the world as if you just arrived.
Well,
and that really helped me, because, you know, those days that I don't have your book to pick up and get inspired by, I go out and I look at the world and I look at it from different eyes. Some magic in it. And when the birds come flying by, they remind us to look up, and they're always saying something. So if you still do any reading, I'll send you a copy, because I think you'd really appreciate it.
We'll have to send you a copy of the James Beauchel, His Life and Art.
I would be honored to display it proudly on our bookshelf.
We'll make sure we get a copy heading out your way. You know, as Jim was describing his philosophy, what gift can anyone give better than vision? And you know, Jim's realism in the earlier years was called social realism, and a lot of people have wondered how that's best defined. And there's a simplicity to it, that Jim would choose images, not because he was trying to hit anybody over the head with a board or a message, but everything he painted of Baltimore had this subtext of, we can do better than this. I mean, if you look at a decrepit building, is it because he's trying to say, isn't the world awful? It was the opposite. It was, look how much potential we have overlooked. And if you flip that to the nature era, and I don't mean to put words in Jim's mouth, but I think of Walt Whitman, and I'll paraphrase, saying, if you want to find nature, you know, look under your boot soles. Jim's images they're not explicitly environmentalist messages, but every time you look at an image of a complex gathering of trees, you're reminded of what we are in the process of spoiling. And I just, every time I think of Jim's work, I think of these two phases. One, we could be better than this, and then the nature, look how much better it is if you just look at it. And
we need to protect it, by the way.
Yeah, you need to protect it. Well, I love that you were talking about Baltimore trying to, you know, be more, hun. What happened to be more, hun? Instead, it became be moron. I don't know.
That's too bad.
Isn't it, though? I mean, there's just those moments where you're thinking, it just is the half, is it a half full glass or is it a half empty glass? And it's up to us sometimes to fill the cup.
Absolutely.
Well, you're doing a nice job of that, Holly. It's so since I remember you as a little girl, and now think of what you're doing with us to bring out some of these thoughts about what is really important in this world. There's an amazing circle being completed, and I feel like it's a great gift to me to be part of it.
Oh, thank you, Bill, and thank you, Jim. I can't thank you enough. I mean, words just don't compare.
Well, I hope you enjoy the book when we get you a copy.
Oh, I'm sure I will. And
so I'm glad that we are reconnecting, because it's been a long time. Life shoot us off in different directions, and I think it's time that we pull it back together.
I agree, and the love is still felt. I feel such deep love for you, man. The memories and the experiences and the lessons are not forgotten, and the timing of this interview is perfect. I don't know if Bill told you, but I was able to interview Lisa Law, who is a famous photographer for flashing on the 60s, and
that's great.
Is an incredible photographer who found herself in the right time at the right place. And I happened to interview someone who got me in touch with someone else who I'd like to thank Hal and David Gans and Tom Wardell and others that helped this happen. And my parents I and Bill for making this happen, because the timing could not have been more perfect.
Yeah, that's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and when Lisa and I were speaking, she said very similar things. She said, people come to her museum and they say, I remember that. Wow, I haven't thought about that since I was younger. And she said, I live it every day. I look at these photos every day and I'm writing stories about the Beatles or Otis Redding or Bob Dylan or, you know, all these different experiences. She organized the food at Woodstock. And was part of the Wavy Gravy platform to get out there and take care of everybody that might have imbibed anything that they weren't sure how they were going to feel afterwards. And, she's telling me this, and she said the point of it is to have people remember how to be good to each other and how we can be more and do more and be better. And the fact that, I'm able to amplify that to others out in the community and share stories like yours and like Lisa's, that is, to me, living my masterpiece and leaving a legacy for others. And that's really where I'm where I'm coming from. So this is a real treat and a real pleasure for me. I'm just kind of speechless at this point.
Well, I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
That's great. I will end my participation with the last two lines of the book, because they have a lot to say about what we've been discussing. I'll preface it by saying the barn has fallen into disrepair since Jim's health has made it impossible for him to work out there, but the hope is to get some things put back together and to change that. So the book ends by saying, "There is cleaning to do after the critters have had free run of the studio for over a year. And yet, there is a beautiful world that arrives each day with the morning light and an infinite arrangement of images, all potential paintings that might find their way to others' eyes. Jim Gauchel has never had a greater wish than to be remembered for making that vision possible."
Oh, amen. That's beautiful.
See what I mean about his writing?
Yeah, he nailed you, Jim. He nailed you.
He sure did.
Well, I am so honored to call you both uncles from a long time ago.
I like Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill and Uncle Jim. Jesus.
That's right.
Thank you so much. I'm going to sign off now, but I'll let you sign off with Jim. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the facilitation today. And Uncle Jim, are you still there?
I'm still here.
And in your parting words, so that I can let you get on to the next gathering you have today?
Nothing really. I mean, I could discuss everything in the book, I hope people get their acts together. This planet is so precious to us. And we're so good at screwing it up, and all the countries, the wars, the pandemic. I mean, my God, get your shots. I mean, let's help start fixing this stuff. So, if we don't, we're going to be very, very sorry, and something else will take over the planet.
That is exactly what Lisa Law left me with a couple weeks ago, Jim.
Oh, really?
Same thing. It's, don't mess it up. We've got a beautiful thing here. Nature's important. You know, history is great, but nature's most important, really.
Absolutely. Yes. And the earth, the Gaia effect, which simply means that the earth is a living organism and that it has the capacity to correct the wrongs that are given it. And it's kind of doing that now.
Yeah.
It's not going to take too much more abuse, and it reacts with however you want to look at it, the storms, the pandemics,
the fires. Yeah. We're getting fires out this way, not luckily in our valley this year, but last year.
Oh, God.
Big fires right nearby.
I didn't even mention the fires. My God.
Yeah. Well,
we got to get our act together. That's for sure.
Maybe we could do a part two sometime and talk about more.
Maybe. Well, we'll let you get the book and you can read it, and maybe you could do a second one.
I would love it. I would love it.
I think you have a lot to say. Now that I got over my nervousness.
Oh, you have nothing to be nervous about. You're an absolute gem.
I've had anxiety all my life, and there's nothing that makes me more nervous than being on machines and being captive. I still haven't touched a computer, so that tells you where my head is.
Well, I appreciate your courage, and I promise you that I will edit this to perfection, and you are going to come across as absolutely the magician and the masterpiece that you are in the sharing of this, and I'll be sure to get you a link to it and a copy of it.
I appreciate everything you're doing. Yes. And I wish you the best of luck in your career and your paintings, and hope you enjoy the book. Thank you.
Well, thank I you. Will. And I enjoy you. And I will, I would like to let everybody know that on this recording, that this was a previously recorded interview, and that there is information on the website of James Voschel, and you can go and find out information there. And how can we get your book?
Well, the information basically is you can mail a check to Mycelium, Mycelium, Press. Mycelium is in reference to mushroom mycelium.
Yeah.
But that's the company, Mycelium Press, LLC. That's at Post Office Box 333, Parkton, Maryland, zip 21120.
Okay.
That's it. Then you can, we'll ship one right out to you.
Oh, that's great. Well, I guess it's time for me to let you both go. Thank you for the time today, I should say. Yeah, I wish you all the best, and you and Lynn, enjoy the day and enjoy visiting with friends. And thank you again for your time today. I love you so much. I hope you know that.
Well, I sure do now. That's for thank you so much, honey.
Yeah. Thank you, Polly.
All right. Well, you guys have a great day out there, and we'll talk soon, okay? Thank you for joining us for this interview with James W. Voschel. Another way that you can get a copy of his life and art book is by going to Mycelium Press, LLC.